रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 28 टेक्स्ट नंबर 42 सर्वभूतेषु चात्मानं सर्वभूतानि चात्मने इक्षेतान्य भावेन भूतेष्व इव तत् आत्मनाम् सर्वभूतेषु चात्मानाम् सर्वभूतानि चात्मने इक्षेतानान्य भावेन भूतेष्व इव तत् आत्मताम् सर्वभूतेषु चात्मानाम् सर्वभूतानि चात्मने इक्षेतानान्य भावेन भूतेष्व इव तद् आत्मताम् सर्वभूतेषु इन ऑल मैनिफेस्टेशंस च एंड आत्मानम् सोल सर्वभूतानि ऑल मैनिफेस्टेशंस च आल्सो आत्मनि इन द सुप्रीम स्पिरिट इक्षेत मैनिफेस्टेशंस इव एस तत् आत्मा आत्मतां द नेचर ऑफ इटसेल्फ ट्रांसलेशन अ योगी शुड सी द सेम सोल इन ऑल मैनिफेस्टेशंस फॉर ऑल दैट एग्जिस्ट इन इज अ मैनिफेस्टेशन ऑफ डिफरेंट एनर्जीज ऑफ द सुप्रीम इन दिस वे द डिवोटी शुड सी ऑल लिविंग एंटिटीज without distinction. That is realization of the Supreme Soul. Purport by His Divine Grace, Ace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, not only does the Supreme Soul enter each and every universe, but He enters even the atoms. The Supreme Soul is present everywhere in the dormant stage. And when one can see the presence of the Supreme Soul everywhere, one is liberated from the material designations. The word Sarva Bhuteshu is to be understood as follows. There are four different divisions of species, living entities which sprout from the earth, living entities born of fermentation or germination, living entities which come from eggs, and living entities which come from the embryo. These four divisions of living entities are expanded in 8,400,000 species of life. A person who is freed from material designations can see the same quality of the spirit present everywhere and in every manifested living entity. Less intelligent men think that the plants and grass grow out of the earth automatically. But one who is actually intelligent and has realized the self can see that this growth is not automatic. The cause is the soul, and the forms come out in material bodies under different conditions. By fermentation in the laboratory, many germs are born. But this is due to the presence of the soul. The material scientist thinks that eggs are lifeless, but this is not a fact. From Vedic scriptures, we can understand that living entities in different forms are generated under different conditions. Birds evolve from eggs, and beasts and human beings are born from the embryo. The perfect vision of the yogi or the devotee is that he sees the presence of the living entity everywhere. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadatikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamascha श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगना रघुनाथामृतं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदां सहगना ललिता श्रीशाकान्वितं च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगतपते गोपेश गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी ऋषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिय वंच कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादिगौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम Hare Krishna. So, in this particular purport that the discussion of Kardamuni and devotees, discussion is continuing. And in this particular verse, the concept that is being brought out is the concept of equality in all of creation, basically. Kardamuni is talking about how all the living entities are present everywhere and all living entities are manifestations of the Supreme Lord, and then how we should see all the living entities with an equal vision. So the overall concept that the Vedic culture teaches us is to see divinity everywhere. Divinity not just in living beings but also in things of this world. In the Vedic culture, we don't use the feet to kick objects. There's a bucket, you don't kick it aside. Ideally, you're supposed to use your hands to push it aside. Now, it might seem a little too weird for somebody who doesn't understand the culture of respect. Now, bucket is a thing. Now, why do you need to push a thing with your hands? It's more practical to use the legs. Like football. Right? There are certain games that are originating in the, you know, in today's modern era, which are primarily leg oriented. You know. So in such situations of life, there is what is the question of seeing respectfully all living entities. And what to speak of the understanding that we see God everywhere. So, when we talk about respecting human beings or respecting all living beings as part and parcels of God, it's possible when we start seeing God everywhere. So, the question is, how do you see God everywhere? There was one man who wanted to see God. So he started going around and trying to find God wherever he could, but somehow he just couldn't find God. So he met one devotee and he started asking him, please tell me, how can I find God? Where can I find God? So this saint, this devotee said, God is in your own heart. You close your eyes and look for God within, you'll find Him within. This man, he became very happy, very inspired. He sat down, closed his eyes, tried to see God within. When he closed his eyes and tried to see inside, he saw some dangerous looking animals. He didn't see God. So he got scared and he stopped meditating. Then he went to some other devotee and he asked him, I went and looked for God inside, but inside only animals are there. I couldn't find God. So this devotee said, no, you look for God in the wrong place. You should go and look for God in satsang, in the association of saintly devotees. they surely God will be there. You know, see here, Krishna tells Narada Muni, Naham Tishtanu Vaikunte, Naham Yoginam Hrudayeshuva, Yatra Gayanti Mat Bhakta Tatra Tishtanu Mat. So these devotees that go to association of devotees, you will find God there. So this fellow went in the association of devotees and, you know, he started looking here and there where God is, you know. So he looked everywhere. He could see people, but he couldn't see God in the satsang, in the association of devotees. So then he got again, you know, fed up. He went to ask another devotee, where is this? God is neither there inside my heart, demons are there. I couldn't find God in satsang also. Satsang, devotees are there, but there's no God there. So this man, he said, actually, God is there inside your heart also, and is also there in satsang. The problem is in your vision. You need a specs. You know, your vision is defective, and if you have proper specs, then you can see God, you know, in both the places. And he said, you have to go to an optician to find, you know, get the right specs. And that optician is Guru. And the Guru will give you a specs, but that you have to pay a big price for getting that specs. The big price is character. You have to pay a big price because having good character is quite costly in today's time and age, you know, where everything is so cheaply available. Character is very, very high priced commodity. So then this man, he actually, this devotee actually told him that inside your heart, God is actually there. But he is sitting behind all these demons, the six anarthas that we are seeing, you know, lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, illusion. So God is there very much, but right in the front, in the forefront, we see these anarthas come, you know, actually. So when you looked into your own heart, what you saw were demons, but God is also there, but he is hiding behind them. When you come with the association of devotees, Krishna is in satsang. But the problem is that in satsang, you need to come to a satsang with a peaceful mind to be able to perceive Krishna there. When we come to satsang also, our mind is so agitated. You know, half the things we don't hear only. And half the things that we hear also we interpret in our own ways, and you know, our mind is just overworking too much. And therefore, when we have pure character, and when we take shelter of the spiritual master gives us specs by which you can see Krishna practically everywhere. Just like you can, with money you can buy anything. But what you buy is a test of your intelligence. I mean, you can buy anything with money, but what you use that money for, that actually tests your intelligence and tests your, you know, virtues. So when we come in the association of saintly people, choosing to come in the association of saintly people also requires punya. Punya, piety, is like currency, money. Like you go to the heavenly planets. If you do a lot of punya, you get to go to the heavenly planets. But once you spend the punya, once your punya is exhausted, then you come back to the earth planet. So punya is like currency. Just like, you know, if you go to a 5-star hotel, how long can you stay in a 5-star hotel? Depends on how much money you have. If somebody has 500 rupees, yeah, or $50, whatever, you know, maybe you can stay in a 5-star hotel for, like, to drink a cup of coffee or something like that. Yeah. And then you come back out. But if you have a few $1,000, you probably can stay for a, you know, you can eat a meal, you can invite your friends and have a dinner. But if you have a little more, you can stay for a few days in the 5-star hotel. And if you have unlimited amount of money, you can stay forever in the 5-star hotel. So, punya is like currency. How much you have, that much you can use. But when you use, the punya decreases. So essentially, with punya, what you spend it on determines whether the punya will increase or decrease. The best way to use punya, the currency of punya, is to use that punya to seek the association of saints, saintly devotees. Because to come to satsang also requires punya. To come to the association of saintly devotees also requires punya. To find a bona fide spiritual master also requires punya. And unfortunately, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about esham tvandakadam pavam jananam punya karmanam. He says that for somebody to practice devotional service with determination, you need to have piety from your previous background. So that means there are many people who will come into Hare Krishna movement. Like I was talking yesterday, you know, we always hear Back to God in magazines or so many, you know, devotees talking about stories of how I came to the Hare Krishna movement. That may be inspiring. But what we today need is to hear stories of how I stayed in the Hare Krishna movement. Because coming is easy, going is very easy. But staying is very difficult. Therefore, to stay, you need to have piety. And that means when you have the certain amount of punya, how do you utilize that punya? If you utilize the punya to gain association of saintly devotees, that is the best use of that punya. When we talk about Krishna's impartiality, how Krishna comes to this material world in the form of the Paramatma, in the form of these different incarnations. Why? Because he loves all of us. So when we talk about, you know, seeing Krishna everywhere, or rather seeing all living entities with an equal vision, it actually is possible when we see the Paramatma, the divine spark within each living entity, each one of us. In addition to coming as a Paramatma, Krishna also comes as his incarnations to connect us to him. What is the objective of an avatar or an incarnation? A powerful person, some great soul, some great devotee, may have the capacity to pull two or three people, maybe a few hundred people along with him to the spiritual world. But when the Supreme Lord comes personally, he can pull thousands of living entities back to the spiritual world. Pulling people who are materially oriented to the spiritual world is not so easy. I mean, all of us have experiences. One time, Narad Muni went to Krishna and he told Krishna that, "My dear Lord, I want to bring all living entities from the material world to the spiritual world." Krishna said, "Go, best of luck, try it out." So Narad Muni went with a lot of enthusiasm and he started chanting, singing the names of the Lord. When Narad Muni started singing, thousands of people started following him. So Narad Muni was thinking, why is Krishna so skeptical? It's so easy to preach, you know. And what is the problem? You just have to tell about glories of Krishna and chant holy names and everybody follows. So as the whole Sankirtan party was following Narad Muni and they were all going back to the spiritual world, suddenly when they passed through one section of the forest, it started raining and gold coins started falling from the sky, you know. And these people started collecting all the gold coins, you know, here and there. So half the crowd got lost in just collecting the gold coins. Narad Muni is telling, forget that gold coin, I'll give you something more valuable. People are just not bothered only about Narad Muni. So then remaining people continued with Narad Muni. And as they went a little further, diamond started raining in the sky. And the remaining people got stuck over there, except four people. You know, four people were still not stuck with that diamonds falling. You know. So Narad Muni felt, at least four people I will take with me to the spiritual world. And then, as Narad Muni was going to go further with these four people told Narad Muni, "My dear Narada, you go ahead, we'll preach to these people and get them. You know. We'll become their gurus." So they also remained back and Narad Muni reached back alone. You know. So essentially, going back to the spiritual world is not an easy job. There are too many distractions and attractions in the material world to keep us busy. Therefore, the Lord personally comes as an avatar, incarnation, to pull us back to the spiritual world. And no matter how powerful living entities come and, you know, try to inspire us, how powerful, you know, saintly people come and inspire us, we still have our excuses to give them. Therefore, Krishna personally comes in the form of his incarnations to pull us back to the spiritual world. So When we talk about intelligence, our capability and capacity to understand God, or you know, understand God's greatness, different people have different abilities to absorb themselves in something higher. God is like a big ocean of milk. There's an unlimited amount of milk in the ocean of milk. And Krishna is kind that he is distributing all that milk also freely. So the milk is available, huge amount of milk is available, but the problem is our vessel is small. We can only handle as much as, you know, the vessel can handle, basically. If you have a small vessel, we can handle only that much. If you have a big vessel, we can handle a little more. So depending on our capacity to hold, you know, Krishna's grace, we handle that much. We can hold that much. Unfortunately, our vessel is not just small, but our vessel has a hole also. Yeah, whatever we hold also a little bit, it just flows away. Because our vessel has this hole of doubting, you know, our own mind tricks us in so many ways. So, truth that is there, truth that is available, it's always available. But how much we can perceive the truth and how much we can hold the truth depends on our personal capacity. So in the Samudra Manthan pastime, there is a very interesting discussion about how Krishna is impartial to everyone. How actually Krishna wants to help everyone. So Samudra Manthan is a pastime where demons and the gods and the demigods, they are trying to churn the milk ocean so that nectar comes out. So both the sides are doing the needful to achieve the same results. But the only difference is that the demigods, when they are seeking the nectar, they want the nectar with the help of the Lord for the sake of doing good for others. The demons, they don't care if the Lord helps them or not. And they don't care, you know, whether the Lord's presence is there or not. What they want is nectar. And what they want is, they don't want to do anything good with the nectar. They just want to use it for themselves and make themselves powerful. So, what is Samudra Manthan? In an indirect way or an indicative language of Samudra Manthan is that God, he wants to make good qualities immortal and he wants to eliminate bad qualities. That is essentially what Samudra Manthan is. So, the demigods represent good qualities and Krishna wants to make them immortal. That means he wants to make good qualities immortal and he wants to make the bad qualities, you know, eliminated. So essentially when Krishna does the Samudra Manthan and all these different things come out from the Samudra Manthan, there's poison that comes out, all these different gifts that come out, and then finally the Amrit comes out. It seems that, so apparently we are saying God is impartial, but actually he is very partial. First of all, he wants to make sure that the demons don't get nectar. That is one partiality, you know. And the second thing is that not just demons don't get nectar, but when it comes to his own devotees also, he is highly partial with them. What he does, look at this. Lord Shiva is supposed to be, you know, the Lord's greatest devotee. What he gives him? Poison. He makes him drink poison. But when Lakshmi Devi and Kaustubh Muni comes out, he takes it himself. So what kind of a person is this? So if he is actually impartial, he should be giving Shiva also nectar. And why should he give Shiva poison? And the most important thing, the Kaustubh Muni that comes out and Lakshmi Devi that comes out of the nectar, he takes it himself. So how do you understand this? The understanding is that if you see it from a deeper perspective, we understand that what is poison? Poison is when it kills a person, then it is poison. But the poison that Lord Shiva drank, it didn't kill him, but rather glorified him. So it's not poison at all. Because that poison which glorifies a devotee is not poison, but it's rather nectar in a different form only. You know. So Krishna, it's not that he wanted to trouble Lord Shiva. But he gave that opportunity for Lord Shiva to drink that poison to glorify him only. And the demons, when Krishna is not giving the nectar to the demons, why is he not giving nectar to the demons? Because nectar is always supposed to be for a greater good for society. But if somebody is using the nectar only for his selfish ends, then that nectar is actually wasted. That nectar is actually, you know, useless. And therefore, Krishna, he arranges the whole Samudra Manthana Leela in such a way that the nectar goes to the demigods and the demons don't get the nectar. But what about Lakshmi and Gaustubuni? How do you understand that? Lakshmi Devi, when she came out of the nectar, the ocean of milk, she was looking for somebody to put a garland around. She was looking for an ideal husband. And interestingly, everybody who was around, they were desperate to marry Lakshmi. They were desperate to have Lakshmi Devi as their wife. Just like in today's time, who doesn't want Lakshmi? One puja that nobody misses is Lakshmi puja, you know. People just love Lakshmi Devi. You know? They just want her as their constant companion. You know? Many people come to Australia from India, higher prospects. You know? The grass is green on the other side. In today's context, the grass is rather, prospects are better on the other side of the ocean. You know? So most people come here for higher prospects, right? So Lakshmi Devi represents higher prospects. So everybody wanted to marry her only. But whom did she want to marry? She wanted to marry somebody who had no defects, no shortcomings. So Lakshmi Devi, when she was analyzing all these different personalities, every demigod she saw, they had some good, but they had some bad also. Every demon she saw, they had some good, they had some bad also. So practically everyone she saw, she could see good and she could see bad. But there was only one person she saw who had no bad, only good qualities. That was Lord Vishnu. But the most interesting reason, the most important reason why Lakshmi chose Vishnu is not that he had no bad qualities and he had only good qualities. The reason Lakshmi Devi chose Vishnu is because Vishnu didn't even look at her once also. Everybody else was staring at her and, you know, desperately wanting to, you know, marry her. But Lord Vishnu didn't even look in her direction. And therefore she understood, he is the only person who can actually value me, because he is not desperate about, you know, having me as in that way. In the sense that Vishnu's understanding of wealth is always for a higher good. It's not for his own enjoyment. So whatever wealth the Lord has, the wealth is always used for a higher good. So Lakshmi Devi, she chose Krishna. It's not that Krishna chose her. She went and garlanded the Lord. It's not that the Lord asked her to garland him. Kaustubhmani, when Kaustubhmani came out from the ocean, it's not that Krishna jumped on Kaustubhmani and grabbed it. Kaustubhmani came and offered himself to Krishna. So essentially the two things that Krishna actually took from the Samudra Manthan were not things that he wanted. The two things that he took from Samudra Manthan were things that wanted to come to him. So there is a difference between him choosing and, you know, something wanting to come to him. So essentially when we look at life from this perspective, we find those who are great souls, they are not affected by gain and loss. That's one of the most important qualities of great personalities. For example, Lord Buddha, once he was giving a talk, a sermon. And after this lecture, there was one man who was very, very envious of Buddha. So this man walked up to Buddha at the end of the lecture and gave him unlimited amount of bad words and spat on his face. Buddha, he just made one statement. He said, "Have you finished telling me what you want to tell me?" This man said, "I never told you anything." Buddha said, I heard your statement. And this man just stepped aside. And Buddha walked away. Whole night this man was only thinking about, you know, how Buddha was so cool, so unaffected by so much criticism and so much insult. The next day, this man, he came again to the satsang. And Buddha spoke. And this first time, this fellow actually heard what he spoke. And then this man's heart melted. And after the whole lecture was over, he came to Buddha. And he placed a flower at the feet of Buddha. And Lord Buddha said, have you finished your statement? Can I go? This man just stepped aside. Again, he didn't speak anything. So essentially, blame and praise are two things that are extremes. But a great soul is affected by neither of them. Attachment and detachment are two extremes. But a great soul is somebody who is unaffected by both of them. Therefore, the Lord, He is impartial because He is not connected. He is not affected by either of the needs. The word paksha. Paksha means sides. You know. And the word pakshapat means taking one of the sides. Who takes which side, basically. Ordinarily, everyone takes sides. But in truth, Garuda or the snake or the bird carrier of Vishnu, birds are called as pakshi. Pakshi means those who have two wings, basically. So, in a sense, the wings of Garuda are indicative of balance. The Lord, He comes on Garuda, which has two wings, which indicates that the Lord, He essentially is impartial to both sides. He comes, He is a balanced person, He is a neutral person. He has nothing to give and take with anything in this world. Unfortunately, we claim so much. Here, this particular verse that we are talking about talks about how a human being, a living entity, should not claim anything because nothing belongs to him. And a living entity should learn to see everybody with an equal vision because everything belongs to the Supreme Lord and everything is connected with something divine. There was once an orator. He spoke some amazing talks. So this man was very proud of his lecture, very proud of what he would speak. And he always thought that every time he spoke different things. So he was very proud of it. So one lady who was in the audience, she understood this man's mindset. She came and told him, every word you spoke, I have read it before. So this man was irritated. He said, how is it possible? This is all absolutely original. You couldn't have heard. The lady said, every word you said, I read it in a book before. He said, which book? She said, dictionary. So essentially, a human being may claim to be 100% original. But which human being is 100% original? Yeah. And knowledge, whatever we have in this world, it's not our knowledge that we can claim to be, you know, original. It's essentially God's greatness that comes through in different ways. So, an egoistic person generally tends to be very proud of what he has and greedy for what he doesn't have. There is a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam about a king named Sahasra Arjun. So, Sahasra Arjun, he had 1,000 hands. And there was a cow whose name was Kamadhenu. This is a desire-fulfilling cow. And Jamadagni, father of Parashuram, he owned this cow. And naturally, he used to use this cow for yagyas and for, you know, performing sacrifices for the welfare of society. So Sahasra Arjun, he had 1,000 hands. What do those 1,000 hands indicate? 1,000 hands indicate that you are supposed to work hard to earn your bread and butter, whatever, you know. thousand hands indicate that if you have 1,000 hands, you can do a lot of work, right? If you have 2 hands itself, you do a lot of work. But if you have 1,000 hands, you can really do a lot of work. I mean, you can probably operate, you know, a few hundred computers. And you can do so many things, you know, with 1,000 hands. But this fellow wanted the Kamadhenu cow. The Kamadhenu cow is a desire fulfilling cow. It means you don't have to do any work, you'll get everything. So the scriptures, when they give stories like this, now on one level the story is very entertaining and, you know, 1,000-handed person and all that, you know. But on another level, the stories are very indicative also. They're indicative of what is the mindset behind people who are proud. So Sahasra Arjun had 1,000 hands, but he wanted the Kamadhenu and he was greedy for the Kamadhenu. So essentially, Sahasra Arjun was a king. And the king represents justice, you know, acting impartial, you know. But when greed enters Sahasra Arjun, when greed enters justice, what ends up is in injustice. So Sahasra Arjun asked Jamadagni Rishi to give him the cow. The cow, the sage, he said, you know, sage lives according to righteousness. So he said, the Kamadhenu cow is not used for my welfare. I'm not using it for my selfish ends. I'm using it for the welfare of the society. And therefore, he said, I've never ever asked Kamadhenu cow anything for myself. It's not that Jamadagni was asking Kamadhenu, give me iPad 7, you know, iPad Pro or anything like that. Jamadagni was not doing anything for himself, basically. He was not using the cow for his own interests. Yes, Jamadagni was using the cow's milk just for sake of serving society, for the Yajnas. Because, I mean, taking care of cows is very difficult. And performing Yajnas, you need a lot of ingredients to perform Yajnas. Lord Vishnu, seeing Jamadagni is going to use everything that the Kamadhenu cow is for the sake of society, he gave him the Kamadhenu cow. So when facility is given to somebody, the facility is given with the understanding that this person has a responsibility to use the facility. Today, when people ask for facility, they are not asking for responsibility, but they are asking for rights to enjoy. So when you use facility as rights, that facility actually becomes a disturbance in your progress. And therefore the facility is taken away from you. So Sahasra Arjun was forcibly trying to take away the Kamadhenu cow from Jamadagni. So essentially, when there is greed, when greed blinds a person, the person does injustice. So we find that there are two desires in everybody's heart. The first desire is that I should get things from others. And second desire is that I should get praise from others. So now, those who have no material desires at all, they still have the desire to hear praise. Somebody might say, I have no desire for any things of this world. But you still have the desire to hear praise that you are detached from. So in one sense, you know, it's not that the original desire is gone. The desire is there. It has just become subtle, you know. So when we understand that we are talking about who is a Tyagi or who is a person who does sacrifice. A person who does sacrifice is somebody who sacrifices not only the gross desire, but also sacrifices subtle desire. Because sacrificing the gross desire is easy in one sense. But sacrificing subtle desire is very difficult because it's subtle. And subtle things you don't understand only. Because it's very difficult to hold on to subtle things, to understand subtle things. And therefore, we need guidance of great devotees to help us deal with the subtle aspects of life. There's a very interesting story of one man who went to Africa. And in Africa, he got a multicolored parrot. And he brought this parrot back to his home. And he would feed this parrot different things. And you know, he's taking good care of this parrot. But somehow, after 2 weeks, this parrot naturally was, he was not happy because he's in a cage, you know. And this parrot was a talking parrot. So this man asked the parrot, after 2 years he was going back to Africa. He said, I'm going back to your friends in Africa, I'm going to meet them. Do you have any message for them? So this parrot, you know, he told his man, tell my friends that I am very happy living in a cage. So this man went and told his parrot friends of this parrot that your parrot has a message for you, your friend has a message for you. And he says he's very happy living in a cage in India, you know. So as soon as one of the parrot, he heard this, as soon as he heard this, he fell dead. So this man was bewildered, you know. Maybe his parrot felt so bad, so many years separated from his friend. So he came back and told this parrot this whole incident, you know. I told your friends, and one of your friends, as soon as he heard that, you know, that you are happy in, he fell dead. As soon as this parrot heard this, he also fell dead in the cage. Now this man was totally bewildered. This man, he loved the parrot, but unfortunately the parrot is dead now. What do you do with the dead parrot? So he threw the dead parrot outside. And as soon as he threw it outside, the parrot flew away. It didn't die. It just acted as if it was dead. So essentially, the understanding of the story is that that parrot, the friend's parrot, the friend, he was telling him, act as if you're dead. When he throws you, you fly away. So there is a very subtle statement, a subtle lesson through this particular story. If you want to live in this world, you should die when you're alive. What is the meaning of that? You should die when you're alive. That means, while you're living, you should, the false ego should die. So in this world, living is very easy. But living in this world essentially means living with the ego. But dying in this world, dying while alive essentially means that living without the ego. The ego dies while you live. The one thing that binds us to this material world is a false ego. And the one thing that keeps us in all kinds of illusory happiness is a false ego. And therefore, while we are in this material world, the way we should live in this material world is with the spirit that everything in this material world belongs to God. If everything belongs to God, including me, then I should definitely connect with God for a higher purpose. So what is the meaning of working in devotion? What is the meaning of living in this world in the spirit of devotion? It essentially means 5 things. The first thing it means is that everything in this world belongs to God. Now, saying this is easy, but living by this is very difficult. Yeah. Like in our temple once, there was one man, one of our devotees. He had come to the temple one day with a plastic bag. And in that plastic bag, there was about 300,000 rupees. He got it in a plastic bag, you know. I mean, who carries money, so much money like that in a plastic bag? But this man, he bought it. And this is Darshanarthi time. There was a hook, you know, on one of the walls. He hung it over there and went to have darshan. Probably he wanted to show that he's highly detached and all that, you know. He hung it like that and went for darshan. So one of our brahmacharis saw this money hanging like that, you know. So he said, somebody is stupid enough to hang it like that. So this brahmachari took the money and kept it somewhere inside. So this man, he came and he started looking for his money after some time, after having darshan, offering flowers and all. And then he said, you know, so he concluded that some brahmachari must have taken it. He assumed like that. Nobody opened their mouth. After about 20 minutes,
This man started panicking.
So he initially said, don't worry, everything is Krishna's only, you know, no problem if the money goes away. Like that he started saying. When he was thinking that everything, you know, this brahmachari has hidden it. After 20 minutes when he realized nobody is telling him anything, he started panicking. You know. He really started panicking. He started begging everyone, please tell me where the money is, please tell me where the money is. And then he only said, you know, you said everything belongs to Krishna, so let it go to Krishna only. What is the problem? You know, it is with you or not with you. This man freaked out. You know. Then finally the devotees gave him, after making him cry sufficiently. You know. So it's easy to say everything belongs to God, but it's actually difficult to live by it. So first statement is everything belongs to God. Everything in this world belongs to God. Second statement is everything in this world belongs to God. Everything in this world doesn't belong to me because I have not made it. Have I made, you know, earth? Have I made fire? Have I made ether? Have I made, you know, all the ingredients of this world? There was a man who went to God and he told him, my dear God, from now on you can retire. We have found way to make man. Your work is no more needed now. God said, "Acha, can you show me how you make man?" This man said, "Very simple. I will take earth, water, fire, ether, combine it all together, and then you breathe life into it. Man is created." God said, "Try it." This man, you know, he started putting earth, water, fire. God said, "First make your own earth. First make your own earth. First make your own fire. First make your own." We use everything which is God's property and we say we are making something new. First make the basic elements, you know, which we can't make. So essentially, what to speak of making things? We can't even make our own success. When we say that I am successful, is my success the result of my efforts? It's definitely not. There are many factors that contribute to me becoming successful. So essentially, nothing in this world belongs to me because I have not made it. The third thing is that if nothing in this world belongs to me because I have not made it, and the third thing is that everything belongs to God. So this understanding brings us to a very important conclusion that I need to be grateful for what anyway belongs to God. So nothing in this world belongs to me because I have not made it, and everything in this world belongs to God, then the next thing is that if everything in the world belongs to God, and if I have some things of this world which belongs to God, then it is given to me as a caretaker. So that means whatever there in this world, if it is there with me and it doesn't belong to me, it belongs to God, if I have it, I am a caretaker. I'm not an owner of it. In front of a house, we put a board, name board, you know, and we claim that this house is mine. It really doesn't belong to me. I'm only a caretaker in that house, right? If a family, we say, this is my family, does the family really belong to me? It doesn't really belong to me because I don't own anything. That means I'm just a caretaker. So, nothing belongs to me because I've not made it. The third thing is everything belongs to God. That means if something is there in my care, I am a caretaker and not an owner. And fifth thing is that if I am a caretaker, if everything belongs to God, then I use everything that I have in His service, back in His service. And that's the whole process of working in devotion. When we understand these five things, then we understand that we're actually not the doers. And we also understand that everything actually belongs to God. And for me, to utilize God's property for my enjoyment is wrong. For me, when I use God's property for His service, then it is actually acting in wisdom, acting in intelligence. So in this translation that we just read just now, Kapila Muni is telling Devahuti about how all living entities are equal. How one should see divinity in all living entities. How can you see divinity in all living entities? How can you see divinity in your wife? How can you see divinity in your husband? How can you see divinity in your children? And especially when they don't act divine, you know. How can you see divinity in them? The way you see divinity in them is that they don't belong to you. Because you have not made them.
And if you're not made them, who has made them? God has made them. And if God has made them, and if they're still with you, they are under your care, under your possession, that means you are just a caretaker. And if you are a caretaker, it is imperative that you should utilize everything that is under your care in Krishna service. That means when we live in a family, when we have resources with us, we learn to use those resources in Krishna service. We try to engage our family members, we try to inspire family members to serve Krishna. Because everything belongs to Krishna. And that is the understanding of this particular verse that we just read today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. It's already late now. We won't take any questions. If there's anything that somebody needs to ask, we can discuss on a personal level. Thank you very much. Grantharashima Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki.